You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Token Theater, friends. I'm Jose Solis, a freelance culture critic, and today I'm joined by
Maria Paz Alegre. I am a librarian in New York City and the judge of the 2024 Caldecott Award.
And I'm Octavia Washington. I'm a dramaturgy student at Columbia University. And I don't know, a Swiftie.
That's a perfect segue, Octavia, into what we're talking about today, which is we all went to the Eras Tour film. And Octavia will brag about having seen the show live in a second. But we wanted to talk about the Eras Tour film as some sort of recorded theater, if that is, you know, like even, I don't even know what people are calling it nowadays. Like, do we have an official name for what people are calling recorded live performance? Did we ever come up with like a, you know, like some term that everyone loves?
No, the National Theater has their like theater at home. Whatever thing, that's pretty much it. Theater at home, digital theater, the Zoomies.
So Taylor at home, I guess, is what we're gonna go for.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Except it wasn't at home. It was still in the cinemas. But yeah.
I mean, I'm sure we're gonna end up watching it at home like many times when it comes out. Like I saw that the streamers are like having a huge like battle over who gets to own it. So, I wouldn't put it past. What was that?
It's supposed to come out on Prime.
Oh, it will be. Huh. So who knew Jeff Bezos? Shifty. I mean, good for him. So before we get started talking about the Eras Tour film, I want to hear your Swifty origin stories.
I can go first. I hate to say this, but I'm late to the game. I'm not an OG Swiftie. I always liked Taylor Swift. I always found her music to be really fun. I listened to the hits, you know, Shake It Off, Style, Blank Space, and I liked them, but there's nothing particularly deeper. But this time last year, I got divorced, and it was a little complicated. We weren't married, but we had so many shared assets together, so we had to divorce our assets. So anyway, I've been calling it the divorce. And I don't know how this happened, but somehow her music started to kind of infiltrate my my playlists. And the more and more I listened to it, the more I really just fell in love with her songwriting. She has some really, really good love stories, but she also has really, really, really good breakup music. And I completely converted to the Church of Swiftie.
All Too Well.
God. What happened to me? God, it was so long ago. It's been a roller coaster ride. We've been on and off, I would say. Where the famous on and off couple, me and Taylor Swift. It started with Speak Now. I was I missed the Fearless era. And then Speak Now, the reason I started listening to it was because I found out she wrote all the songs. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. I want to be a writer. Let me give her a listen. So that was, when did Speak Now come out? That's like 2010.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, right? We're going to have to week it. Yeah.
In middle school. And then I was listening to Taylor Swift Speak Now, like in the privacy of the kitchen, doing it completely alone. All my friends were in their like One Direction phase. And I didn't talk about my love of Taylor Swift with anybody except myself. Although apparently my mom like was pretty much a part of my journey. Because I remember the other day, when Speak Now, the re-release came out, and I put on Enchanted, and she was singing some of the words. And I was like, you know this song? And she was like, duh, I grew up next to you when you were in the kitchen listening to Speak Now by yourself. I was in the other room overhearing it. So that's kind of crazy.
That is so cute. And like every time you say kitchen, I keep wanting to say by the refrigerator light. So we're just going to add that in there.
Not by the refrigerator light. No, unfortunately. But definitely watching sparks fly. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Well done, Octavia. So I think that, you know, like for full disclosure, Maria Paz and Octavia are current cohort members of the BIPOC Critics Lab that we're doing at the Public Theater. And I'm pretty sure that I've told you my Swiftie origin story before because I actually teach it. I have to say that I came to Taylor through this very gross way. Like I, you know, like being a man, I was a very gross, you know, sexist, misogynistic, I guess, man who thought she was just this like dumb girl who kept singing about boys when all along I was also like a dumb boy thinking about boys. And then this one day I read this piece in the New Yorker called You Belong With Me by Lizzie Whitcomb. And I was on this, you know, bus ride in Costa Rica that went on for like 6 hours. And I had devoured every piece in my New Yorker, except for Taylor Swift piece, because I was like, I don't want to engage with this. But then I had nothing else to read. So I read that piece. I was so mind blown by her work ethic, by how smart she was, by the way that she spoke about her craft and her lyrics, that by the time that I arrived at my destination 6 hours later, I had bought, I mean, I don't think we had Spotify back then, but I had bought every Taylor album available on iTunes. And it's been a love story ever since. So it's one of the pieces that I use to teach the power of journalism, and you know, like good arts journalism. So that was my Swiftie origin story. And as all of you know by now, like I'm obsessed. Like it's ridiculous. Like I have 5 Taylor Swift tattoos, which is wild. Like maybe if she ever listens to this, Taylor, I don't think anyone has more Taylor tattoos than I do. So please come say hi to me sometime. So we all went to the Eras Tour film. So who would like to tell us a little bit about what it is? Like I don't know that there's a plot to it, but what is the Eras Tour film?
I can go. The Eras Tour film is a recorded live of her concert. And specifically, it was her last concert on the Eras Tour in the United States at SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles. And they recorded every song. And the only difference, I think, was that there were a few songs that were left out. But I think the biggest reason is that the tour was so expensive, and you know, there's only a certain amount of seats that are available for people to go, and I couldn't get one. And when she announced the movie, it was this ultimate relief because honestly, I felt so left out that I was watching every TikTok video that I could of her and all of her fans and living so vicariously. So it was so fun to actually have a live experience. And when she tweeted about this, she said, "When you're in the theater, go nuts." And so I was more than happy to sing my heart out and dance as everybody else did too.
Amen. Can we talk a little bit about that? Because like that's one of the things that I love the most about the Eras Tour film as an experience. Like I, you know, being a big Swiftie and everything, I clearly have this huge bias, but I have never had such an amazing experience at the movie theater like I did watching this film. And I don't think I've ever had such an amazing experience in community, in a theater of any kind, ever. And basically, what you're saying, my pass is like we broke the rules, like we got off our seats. Like I asked my friend that came with me to slow dance with me to Lover on the aisle, and I was like, "What the hell am I doing? Like, this is not."
Oh my God. Love that.
I mean, she started crying. She was like, "This is the most romantic thing that's happened to me in years." And I'm like, "Oh, okay, you're welcome. Like, I just wanted to dance." So, can we talk about this? Like, we are taught and we are raised, especially as people of color, to have all this like really silly etiquette rules whenever we're in performance spaces. So, what was the experience of breaking the rules like for the two of you?
Well, I want to stress first of all, the Eras Tour is like 3 hours long, which makes it crazy that you saw it twice. When I was at the movie theater because I saw it live in person, I was like, okay, I think I'm gonna see half of this maybe, and then I'll wait for it to come out on streaming. But it was like a pretty similar experience, like being there in person and being there at the movie theaters, which I think is kind of wild. That doesn't really happen that often because there were girls who were still wearing their cowboy hats to the theater, wearing or I was wearing my friendship bracelets, the ones that I got when I was at the concert at MetLife. So that was already a little bit strange coming into the movie theater in costume. And then the whole point is that you're supposed to be prepared to sing, you know, it's a musical experience. So you're supposed to participate. Really sitting there being silent is sort of the wrong etiquette. It's not really how you're supposed to do it.
I totally agree with that. Like, did you? I mean, Octavia, since you saw it live, and please brag all you want about it right now. Since you saw it live, what was it like to get to see the show the way Taylor wants you to see the show? Because obviously, when you're in the arena in a stadium, like you have your vantage point, like you can see what you see. But then, as directed by Sam Ranch, this movie has some of the most amazing cinematography that I've seen in any live performance. Like, we have all this like cameras like flying over her, like twirling over her. She's like, she does all this like magnificent winks and nods at the camera. Like, I cannot even begin to imagine how it was to plan something like this. So, what was it like, Octavia, to see, the show the way Taylor, I guess, envisioned it?
Yeah, it was totally different. First of all, I had like really terrible nosebleed seats, but I didn't care. I wanted to see it so badly. We had like eight people set up at different laptops when the queue was starting. So I was like making sure I had to see it no matter where I was in the stadium. So when I got to see the movie, I got to see all her expressions because I was really just participating in the moment of singing with all the people around me. Like it was much more about all the other people who were sitting next to me, much more than it was about looking at Taylor because she was so far away. But this time around, like I was really focused on her stage presence and what she was bringing to each performance. Like there was one song, oh, when she's doing Reputation, I couldn't see it at all. But then I got to see what all the performers were doing when they're in the boxes for Look What You Made Me Do. Like I actually got to experience that performance when I saw it in the movie theaters. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. So I don't know, it's kind of different. Like I had like a distance when I saw the movie versus when I saw it in person. Like the emotions were running high and I was singing with everyone when I was in person. So it wasn't really, I guess I was really all that focused on her, which is kind of weird.
Maria Paz, do you have any favorite songs in the film?
I did the well, I saw it twice, and the first time I saw it with a friend who is not a Swiftie, but she wanted to come, and it was fun. And then the next time I saw it with two Swifties, and it made such a huge difference. And honestly, the biggest difference was that completely unplanned, there were about 100 little girls there, And they made the experience. They were screaming every lyric at the top of their lungs. And they had these choreographed dances to August and Love Story. And so honestly, it just made the experience so much better. It actually felt like it was a live concert, and it was really fun. And, you know, speaking about the, you know, the kind of conservative traditions of theater, I always follow them. I never record. I always, you know, I don't rustle anything, but I was, you know, taking out my phone and recording these dances and singing at the top of my lungs and dancing. And it felt so freeing. It felt like such a release. Something that Taylor said, I'm going to get the exact quote wrong, but it's something like, she doesn't believe in people who will ever make someone feel bad for being excited. She thinks that those are the worst kind of people. And so when these girls were singing, all of us were yelling at them, we love you, you're awesome, and we love to see it. So it was really cool to break that convention.
That's really beautiful. Like, I remember when I saw a very young girl just like beating her chest to All Too Well. And it was both the most beautiful, touching thing ever. And I also kept praying inside, like, I hope this poor girl never goes through anything like All Too Well. But it's like the way in which Taylor's, you know, songs touch people of all ages. Like, we don't have to have had Jake Gyllenhaal, you know, shatter us in order to feel what All Too Well is like. And I saw it the first time with this friend of mine who I kind of like coerced into becoming a Swiftie. But the second time I went with my mom, who doesn't really know Taylor Swift at all. It's, you know, she's huge, but for some reason, I don't think like all parents know her, except for yours, Octavia. Like, your mom's pretty awesome. And I was so shocked.
Oh, because my mom. That's it. She does not like Taylor Swift, to be fair, to clarify.
You know, like, well, thank you for that, Octavia. And I'm sorry, Octavia's mom. So, but I was, so I kept thinking about something that my mom pointed out. And she said to me that she had noticed that the movie theater was mostly, you know, young women and girls, and how she felt that it was a safe space for them. Like, she told me, there's probably not a single girl here who feels threatened, who feels like something bad can happen to her here. And my mom's a human rights activist, and she's like fighting human trafficking all the time. So she's always, you know, like keeping her eye on little girls and like women. And I hadn't thought about that. And I love that so much. So I was hoping I could hear you talk about, you know, about that. But was it like a safe space for you as well?
I think 100% so. Honestly, if I had to compare, I haven't felt that level of female energy that big since I went to the Women's March in DC. It was so polite, meaning that before we were exchanging friendship bracelets at the movie theater and complimenting each other. And like, I love your Eras Tour costume. And we were saying all of that to each other. And then, yeah, for these little girls to feel absolutely free to run uninhibited around the cinema, you know, screaming August at the top of their lungs. It was a really safe space. And I actually remember this conversation because I've had a couple conversations, because the Eras Tour happened right before the Barbie movie came out. And I remember speaking to a few guys who are like, you know, not really my thing. And me saying like, yeah, it's not your thing. This is not for you. The Eras Tour is for us. The Barbie movie is for us. The Renaissance Tour is for us. Like, this was very much the summer of girlhood. And it felt really good to have that again in autumn. I really missed it.
You're so right about that. Because like, I keep trying to think about, you know, like, I'm a huge movie guy. And I Can't think of a single movie that I've seen this year. I promise I will get to Past Lives at some point, Maria Paz, but it hasn't opened in Spain.
It's so good. See it. As you should open.
Yes, I totally will. But obviously I love Barbie, but like other than Barbie, like I couldn't think of any, you know, big movies. And the fact that the Eras Tour film feels like the you know, my Titanic of 2023 is wild, and what she's doing in terms of changing the way that distribution happens and the way in which art is produced and is like shared with people is something like wild. And can we talk a little bit about the theatrical aspects of the Eras Tour? Because it's like holy fuck, what a show.
Yeah, definitely. I really like that you said that, Maria Paz, about like sometimes you're not the intended audience for something. I think that's something that I feel like I have to point out to other people. Like one of the reasons I really love Taylor Swift is because she talks about in the movie, she says it explicitly, but like, I hope when I'm doing these songs for you, you're getting to project some of your experience onto it, which I guess is part of the reason why I wasn't, it's not that I didn't notice her, but that I was like in thinking about something else when I was at the live tour, because I was thinking about my personal experience and connection to each song. Like when she was singing 22, I was like, I'm 22. Red is the first album I ever bought with my own money. Now I'm thinking about my childhood. And she one of her surprise songs at the MetLife show was Holy Ground. And I was like, that's my favorite Taylor Swift song. And it always makes me think about this specific moment in middle school when I was running around with my friends. And so I was doing a lot of that. I was doing a lot of projecting my experiences onto hers, partly because I think the experiences she's writing about are so specific that they sort of traverse, you know, like portions of universality, that she's so specific about her own experience that you're allowed to project onto it. And so if you don't have the sort of vernacular of girlhood, then yeah, it's kind of hard to like get what she's talking about, you know?
Yeah, I didn't, the first time I saw the movie, I didn't see it with a Swiftie, but I did see it with someone who has a master's in theater direction. And so they appreciate theatricality. And especially it was really interesting hearing their perspective from someone who wasn't a Swiftie, like during Tolerate It, you know, and she's at the table and she's laying out all the fancy shit and she's, you know, the vase. And it was so unnecessary. You know, she didn't have to lay out the table and actually do all this stuff, but she's corny. You know, she is a theater kid. She is a total witchy witch during her Evermore era with the sparkling balls and the opera cloaks. And it was, you know, I loved that it was that she leaned into it. As cool as she was during Reputation, as sparkly as she was during Lover, She really leaned so heavy into the drama. Like I was living for all of the drama. And I don't usually see that as much in live shows. I don't usually see as much performance, but there was so much performance in this movie and in this concert.
Oh, for sure. There's definitely like a cheesiness to Taylor Swift that it's one of the things I really like about her, but it is like theater. Like, if you can't suspend your disbelief, it's going to look stupid to you. You have to be in the know. You have to buy into it in order to participate. So, like, when she's doing all of her motions towards the audience, when she's winking at them, or when she does her classic Taylor Swift moves where she's, like, the thing with the hand, the one pose where she's like doing her power move that she does at like every show, like you have to be willing to lean into the cheesiness with her in order to get it. And if you're not doing it, then it's just like, it's just gonna look silly.
I love that, and you're right about that. And I did call her cheesy as well. Like, I remember especially this part in My Tears Ricochet, where she's singing something about a ship, and then a ship shows up on the screen, and I'm like, Taylor, like, like we know, like you don't have to show us the actual ship. But
No,
then,
literally. It
yeah,
could
but
be a
then,
metaphor, girl.
yeah. I mean, we get a metaphor, girl, totally. But it's like, it's cheesy, but at the same time, it's so earnest and so sincere. And like, I feel like that kind of like really straightforward communication is so rare. And like, for instance, I was obsessed with The Last Great American Dynasty, where she was basically doing like a little play about the song. And the fact that she also talks about Folklore being the first album where she came up with characters and made up all these stories made me dream up like what kind of musical I would want Taylor to write at some point. And I wonder if you have any dream Taylor Swift musical projects.
I don't think I do. She already, well, okay. She already has like there's a very immersive quality to being a Taylor Swift fan because it's like you have to participate. That's why she does all the puzzles, the vault tracks, the re-releases. And then there are like references across songs that you'd only catch if you've been listening to a long career discography. That's why the Eras Tour is like fun to a person who's a Swiftie, because it's like, oh, you made the reference about love being red, but now it's golden and lover and like blah, blah, blah. And you're following all of that. So maybe there's something there with like all the references that track throughout her songs. One of my friends and I were talking, and we were like, God, she loves some damn green eyes, doesn't she?
And she loves a London boy.
And I don't think anyone loves the word darling as much as Taylor Swift does, right?
Right.
Getaway car, that's also a favorite. This is such a good question. I never thought about this because I think I'm just always so grateful for whatever she puts out. But, speaking of the theatricality of it all, I could totally see a musical. I would love to see her take on a musical. I don't know if it could be or should be, a jukebox type of thing, songs that she's already done. It would be. She's got it in her. She has so much drama and theatricality to her performance. I'm really curious to see what she would do in writing a musical. And I hope it would be something like, what Duncan Sheik did with Spring Awakening. Like I'd really like to see what she would what she would come up with.
Since you mentioned Duncan Sheik, and I thought about American Psycho instead, and I was listening to the vault tracks from 1989, Taylor's version, and now I want Taylor Swift to write a musical based on the film Drive, the Ryan Gosling movie. Which, have you seen it?
No,
I haven't seen it
It's
before.
amazing. Like, it's this incredible movie. Where basically like Ryan Gosling's like being Ken, but a little bit smarter and like all badass and stuff. And it's just like this dark LA neo-noir movie with this incredible synth pop soundtrack. And I was listening to the vault tracks with my brother, who's not a Swiftie at all. And he was like, are those like covers? Are those from like the 80s? He's like, they sound like from Drive. And I'm like, yes. I'm like, yes. So, I mean, a straight boy said it. So please, Taylor, think about writing a Drive musical at some point. I think that would be incredible. Okay. So, can we talk about? I don't know if this is the right word to use here. Like, I don't want to use this word, but I guess I'm going to go for it. Converting non-Swifties into Swifties, which I think is something that as people who love theater, we sometimes have to do that, right? Like, there's people who flat out think that theater isn't welcoming to them and it's not for them and won't want them in there. And then I feel like there's a lot of that. And like Taylor Swift you know, the thriftiness, I guess, of it all. Like, have you had that experience of like trying to convince someone, you know, like, yes, theater and musicals and plays, whatever, and Shakespeare, whatever, are for you in the same way that Taylor is?
Yeah, I guess so. It's been the, it's like the ever, everlasting conflict of being a Swiftie, which is the sort of, and of being a theater person, which is just the sort of innate embarrassment of it all. Because it is, if you like step back, it seems sort of silly. But then my issue is that like, I remember I started doing this as a kid. I remember trying so hard to pick out what of what people said to me about her was just like just sexism, and like what was bias and prejudice and what was like a valid critique. I remember being a kid and oh my God, it to be a middle schooler during the time when she was dating Harry Styles, I wouldn't wish that on anyone in the entire world, like not even on God's strongest soldier. Because I was defending her left and right. And everyone, my friends, first of all, to be fair, they were like 12. They were like, oh, I don't know. Like, she's just using him. And I was like, oh, I don't know what you guys are talking about. Like, I feel like you guys are reusing sexist stereotypes to talk about her. And sometimes I just feel like it's just a song. Like, I just want to engage with the songs and the lyricism. And that's like a hard thing to do with her for some reason, which I guess is part of like, I guess it's part of the career that she's cultivated because her songs are kind of like diary entries. So they're about her and they invite a sort of unraveling of her person too. But sometimes I'll sit there and I'd be like, if you guys could just like detach your connotations of like, who she is, who you think she is as a person, and just look at the lyricism, I feel like you'd find a much stronger writer than I think you're giving her credit for. And I don't know why people, well, I know why, but like I'm waiting for the day where people treat Taylor Swift like they treat Bob Dylan, like they're able to separate him, the person, and his lyricism. And there's a lot of grace that's offered to a lot of male artists, but that isn't offered to her. And it's kind of odd.
I completely agree with you. I was reading her reaction recently to Kendrick Lamar re-recording and how she couldn't believe that he said yes to re-recording and how she was so inspired by his re-recording. And she just seemed so, so grateful. And at the same time, I was like, but you're Taylor Swift, you know, like you, of course he wants to re-record his work with you. You're Taylor Swift. Like, yes, he's Kendrick Lamar and you're Taylor Swift. Like you are both very much voices for a generation of fans and your work means a lot. So, you know, game recognizes game, Taylor. Yeah, when it comes to Taylor Swift and people and Swifties versus non-Swifties and converting, when I became single, you know, and I've been dating, some of the people I've been dating have had to listen to a lot about Taylor Swift because I've come into my Swiftdom, you know, while dating people. And you get a lot of reactions. I can see a lot of eyes, you know, glaze over. And that's when I realized I'm 15 minutes in and this is too long for most people who are not fans. But at the same time, shout out to this amazing doctor I've been seeing. Their name's Rue. And Rue is not a Swiftie by any means, but Rue likes me and likes seeing me happy. And because Taylor makes me happy, they are totally supportive. And actually, the other, I guess it was a month ago now, for no reason whatsoever, they made me a friendship bracelet. Like it was with my favorite color and butterflies and my name. And they had never ever made a friendship bracelet before, but they went out and bought a damn friendship bracelet kit and made it to me. So they're not a Swiftie, but I think there's room for conversion there, and it meant the world to me, and it still does.
That's basically out of love story, my best. Like, I love that moment for you.
Yeah, like, be careful. You kind of just proposed in Swiftie. We're both divorced, so we're not going there. But like, this is a big deal.
I love that you're talking about, you know, like when you were both of you talking about, you know, I think Bob Dylan's pretty boring, by the way. So I hope Taylor's never compared to Bob Dylan. But that's just me. But I do think
to make a lot of people angry. I'm here for it.
Okay, thank you. That's my brand, I guess. No, but I mean, nothing against Mr. Dylan, but it's like, I've always like identified more with like women artists, and like I find men pretty boring. But what you're saying made me think about, can we think about any people like in theater, like any writers in theater who are like a, you know, like a theater version equivalent, I guess, of Taylor, you know, like people whose work is constantly misunderstood and criticized just because it's by women. I guess most women would be the answer. I don't know. Help me out on this.
I don't know. I can't really think of anyone. The first thing that came to mind was like Lin-Manuel Miranda, because that's like the equivalent fame level. Although I think he gets some pretty valid critiques. And I think Taylor gets pretty valid critiques too. But sometimes there's like a disconnect between like the internet reputation that those people have of their person, and then like the work on the page itself.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I haven't thought about it in terms of that, but I think Eve Ensler would be a bit of a comparison. Widely done, widely well known, but it became so iconic, you know, like the black dress, the monologues, that it it's easily satirized, and it kind of became like a bit of a caricature, the vagina monologues and other work. But you know, when you look at the work she's done and the people she's changed, and you know, when I remember the first time I read that and how it changed me. And it's almost like a little embarrassing to say, like there's something cliche, but Eve Ensler meant a lot to me. And yet I don't see men flocking to her latest plays. I see women, always women, and always really, really good audience members.
With that in mind, Manipas, can we talk about what theater, which is like, again, this art form that we love so much, what can theater learn from Taylor and the Eras Tour?
You know, I've been seeing a lot of opera lately, actually, and I have to say, a lot of the Eras Tour stuff that I saw kind of reminded me of opera, just in that, you know, there's a move to have some more dramatic stuff in opera that's more interesting. I just saw Dead Man Walking, the opera. I'm going to see Malcolm X, the opera. Both of them are at the Met. But also, you know, there's so much joy in seeing The Barber of Seville or La Traviata. They're silly, they're cheesy, but they're fun. And like, they really, really lean into, you know, that wink at the audience. And there's so much joy to it. So I do see comparisons in a related form. But as far as what could theater learn from Taylor, I think the storytelling of the music. I feel like not always do musicals really have storytelling within it. It's more like a device to continue the story, but actually having the story in the music is not something that I see as often. So
being that she's a musician, I'd like to see that. I think that could be really interesting to have absolutely deep and powerful lyrics that you want to, you know, have in quotes above your bed. I'd love to see that and see how that would affect musical theater.
Well, there's the obvious one that you brought up, Jose, which is that more shows should be recorded. Like, of course, I was much more comfortable at the theater than I was when I was at the live event. Just because that's just me, but I just like to sit down. And just thinking about accessibility, like, it's much more accessible to be at home watching a show, having some sort of privacy, I think. But although the communal aspect is what makes theater so great. But then I think that also the other thing that the Eras Tour has, and that Taylor Swift specifically has in like her cultivation of fandom, is like her expectations of the spectator are different than I think most theater shows are. And that's part of the reason her career is so long lasting. Like, she invites you over to come listen to the album before it comes out. Like, that's weird. That's a weird expectation, or a non-normative expectation of closeness with the spectator than I think most theater shows allow.
Why not be less snobby? You know, why only hold people to see your show when it's, you know, a $400 ticket, a $500 ticket, a $10,000 floor seat? Why not be able to spread your work to more people? You know, the Met already kind of does that, and it's a solid system where they record live one night of the season, and they project it to like a select number of theaters. Why not have that for those who can't, you know, afford to come to New York City, who can't afford a ticket at the Met? They can afford a cinema ticket to their local movie theater. Why not have that? And I love what you said, Octavia, about having expectations of audience. One of the best shows I've ever seen is a play called Sinking Ink by Sangu Jikam. And it was super interactive hip hop theater, like, you know, wave your hands in the air and so much call and response. And yeah, I loved that. And I think it's so much more fresh. It's so much more innovative to do that. Yeah, there's a lot theater has to learn from Taylor Swift.
And I also do love the Met recordings, because, like I always say, more than the Empire State and the Statue of Liberty, the thing that I miss the most about New York City is Kelly O'Hara. And thanks to those Met recordings, I got to see her in the Hours last winter. So I'm with you on that, Maria Paz. So hi, Kelly O'Hara, if you're listening as well. And I'm thinking Kelly O'Hara as Taylor Swift in Taylor Swift the Musical, but that's just me. So I want to go back to the question that I hope you won't hate me for all of eternity, but what is one song that you wish she had included in any of the eras?
Oh, God. I don't know. God. Well, some of them she did as, like, I can't even blame her, because she did them as like surprise songs in other cities. So, like, I think with 1989 coming out, I've realized that maybe my number one Taylor Swift song is New Romantics. Especially, I think my favorite Taylor Swift song, like, changes as to where I'm at in my life. And so New Romantics, it's like, oh, we're in our 20s, like, we're in the city, life is crazy. And then I'm like, okay, like, that's my favorite song. But I don't know, she did it in other places, so it's not her fault.
I would love to hear would have, could have, should have. The first time, I'm going to cry now. The first time I ever heard that song, when it got to that line, "Give me back my girlhood, it was mine first," I remember like my mouth dropped and just tears started streaming down my face. And then I, you know, fiercely went to TikTok, and sure enough, there's whole reaction videos. There's a reaction video compilation of people reacting to that one line. And it's always women and girls who just start crying uncontrollably. And then there's videos of it playing at other concerts, you know, just kind of in I guess background, and women and girls just screaming that line at the top of their lungs, "Give me back my girlhood, it was mine first." There's something so representative and cathartic in that line, and I wish I could have screamed that at the theater.
Thank you for sharing that. That's really beautiful. I guess my song would be Red. I mean, that song just takes me back to my first week living in New York, and yep, different times almost. So thank you both for
you did both have surprise songs, but sorry, Jose. Octavia, what were your surprise songs? What did you get?
I got Holy Ground and False God.
Ooh, those are nice.
Those are very nice, Octavia. So we're gonna have to talk more about that. Like, I cannot wait for my surprise songs. Like, May next year cannot come fast enough. So in the meantime, we have the Eras Tour playing in movie theaters right now, literally all over the world, which is wild. It's so amazing. And also, it's going to be on Prime soon. So thank you both for joining me today. Where can people find you online or wherever?
You can't find me online. You can find me on Octavia Reads. My main Instagram profile is private. You can find me on all my socials are the same. It's my name, at Maria Paz Alegre. There are quite a few videos of Taylor, but mostly it's pictures of my dog Lovejoy. And anytime I post a video of Lovejoy versus a video of myself, I get way more hits. So, oh yeah, follow that at Lovejoy actually, which Jose follows. I love that you're a fan of my dog and that my dog has become like the unofficial mascot of the Public Theater's BIPOC Theater Critics Program.
I mean, how can anyone not love Lovejoy? So please, everyone, follow Lovejoy. Like, it's just pure, I don't know, Lovejoy, I guess.
And joy, literally. Yes.
Yeah. Thank you both. And you all know where to find me. Like, I'm going to add some more stuff to the show notes. And I hope we do this again. Maybe talk more Taylor or more theater in the future. So thank you so much, Octavia and Maria Paz. This has been a treat.
Thank you.
Maria Paz, how many versions of 1989 have you bought so far?
How many versions of what?
1989 have you bought so far?
Oh, first I got the original, and then when it released, I downloaded that. And then when the deluxe came out, I deleted it and got like, so I guess three versions of 1989.
And what about since Friday?
Oh yeah, no, those are it. It's like the original and then the Friday drop. But then there was like a deluxe after the Friday drops. Then I deleted that. And then like, so three times I've downloaded 1989.
Okay, no vinyls, no cassettes, no nothing.
Oh, I see. Yeah, no, I also got it on vinyl. I love vinyl, so yeah.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.